good morning. KBOO, KBOO Portland, your community radio station on a Thursday morning, a minute now before 9 o'clock. Coming up in a half hour, we've got Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering speaks with John Michael Greer about his book, Dark Age America, Climate Change, Cultural Collapse, and the Hard Future Ahead. We'll have Chris Andre at 10 o'clock with Air Cascadia, Flashpoints at 10:15. At 11, Between the Covers, host Bethany Grabo talks with John Corey Whaley. At 11:30, we'll have Black Book Talk this week with Portland-based author and educator Renee Watson. That's all coming up, but first, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. That's next on KBOO.
Come over here, to the right-hand speaker.
KBOO's book and record sale is happening August 13th at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street, starting at noon. Find treasures amongst the stacks of donated items while raising money for KBOO, your very own community radio station.
Friction between the stylus and the record produces a force which makes the arm try to swing towards the record center.
Again, that's KBOO's book and record sale, Saturday, August 13th from noon to 7 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Coot Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm now standing in the center, and my voice should be located precisely midway between the speakers.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. From Radio Havana, Cuba, in an Olympics season mired in myriad controversies, add one more to the mix. The game's media village is built on the mass graves of African slaves. A community of descendants of runaway slaves known reverentially in Brazil as Quilombos say that Baramedia Village 3, located near the Olympic Park in Rio de Janeiro, was built atop a burial ground where their ancestors are buried. Adelson Batista Almeida, the leader of Camarim Quilombo, has accused developers of erasing the country's cultural identity, both by destroying archaeological remains at the site and depriving the community from having a space to celebrate their Afro-Brazilian heritage. The Media Village, Radio Havana writes, is a condominium that will be sold to private buyers after the Olympics. Acquired in 2013 by the real estate developer Cirela, the company in their construction of the building destroyed hundreds of trees, a community football pitch, the remains of an old slave owner's house, and a slavery-era sugar mill. Under Brazil's modern constitution, Quilombos are entitled to claim the lands they historically occupied. The Camarim Quilombos did claim the site of the media village, but the process was never finalized. The Rio de Janeiro city government denies any such claim. Yvette, writing in the website Breaking Brown, the tension that led to the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri after Michael Brown was gunned down by then-officer Darrell Wilson had been boiling for some time. Like many communities in America, Ferguson city leaders had decided to increase revenue by over-policing residents. According to a 2014 report on Ferguson by NPR, a city of 21,000 people issued 32,975 arrest warrants for nonviolent offenses, mostly driving violations, according to a report in Priceonomics. This was no coincidence. An email uncovered by the city's finance director revealed a plan to fund the struggling city on the backs of poor African Americans. He warned, quote, unless ticket writing ramps up significantly before the end of the year, given that we are looking at a substantial sales tax shortfall, etc., Ferguson's law enforcement practices are shaped by the city's focus on revenue rather than by public safety needs, the Department of Justice wrote in its report on the city's leadership. Continuing with a report from Breaking Brown by Yvette, Priceonomics analysis found that Ferguson has a population of just over 20,000 that is 67% African American, and it raised over $2 million from fines and fees in 2012. Do the math, that's a couple hundred bucks each. This only happens when citizens become targets. And what's worse, this isn't just happening in Ferguson. Keeping blacks at the bottom is a lucrative business in many cities. She writes, we found one demographic that was most characteristic of cities that levy large amounts of fines on their citizens, a large African-American population. Among the 50 cities with the highest proportion of revenues from fines, the median size of the African-American population on a percentage basis is more than five times greater than the national median. Turning to international news from South Front, the Orthodox Church of the Moscow Patriarchate has mounted a peace pilgrimage from the Donbass region of Ukraine up to Kyiv with tens of thousands of participants. The procession was stopped just outside the city by the Kyiv government, which considers the massive group very suspicious. The authorities have so far responded to the march with a sense of proportion. However, right-wing extremists might try to escalate the situation through provocations. Tens of thousands of people had come to Kyiv Monument for the baptism of the medieval Kievan Rus, according to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Moscow Patriarchate. This Thursday, today is the anniversary of the Christianization more than 1,000 years ago. The competing Orthodox Kievan Patriarchate invited its believers to the prayer service as well. Eyewitnesses reported seeing up to 20,000 supporters of the church marching and praying for peace and the preservation of Ukraine. Previously, two peace marches with hundreds of pilgrims from the west and east of the country had already come together in Kyiv. Deutsche Welle reported that the Ukrainian government prohibited the marchers from arriving as a group. Ukrainian nationalists accused the participants of the march of spying activities for Moscow. Participants will be allowed to march in similar groups to the final event. Voloshin reported that the peace march also has to do with the power struggle in the Ukraine. The Kyiv government wants to get the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Moscow Patriarchate under control, but the church is defending itself against this and wants to maintain their ties to Moscow. That from South Front. Dateline Washington, McClatchy, one of the few more or less independent news sources in the U.S., Franco Ordonez writes, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson said on Wednesday that deportations of Central Americans would continue despite recognition by the administration that a humanitarian crisis had enveloped El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala. The administration does not plan to stop some 15 to 18 flights a week back to Central America, where homicide rates are now some of the highest in the world. Homeland, and that's pretty high, speaking for myself, when you consider that this country has the highest in the world. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson on Wednesday, at a breakfast sponsored by the Christian Science Monitor, said the United States does not have open borders. Those apprehended trying to enter the country illegally and who have been ordered removed by immigration courts after exhausting their appeals will be sent home, he said. And skipping ahead in the article, the White House reached an agreement with Costa Rica last week to host up to 200, just 200, Central American refugee applicants while the United States assessed their asylum claims. It was part of a large package of measures intended to protect migrants that included expanding the number of children who could apply to the U.S. Refugee Program for Children. Advocates such as Kevin Appleby, the Senior Director of International Migration Policy at the Center for Migration Studies of New York, praised the expansion as an acknowledgement by the Obama administration that Central American migrants are fleeing a humanitarian crisis and not an economic one. But implementation of the program is a years-long process. Nearly 30,000 people traveling as families and 26,000 unaccompanied children have been apprehended at the border trying to cross illegally this year. Continuing with the McClatchy article, the administration has been criticized for focusing more on enforcement than protection. The administration has carried out mass raids, and thousands of children and their parents have been held in large family detention centers. Meanwhile, the expansion of Central American refugee centers announced by the Secretary of State John Kerry in January hasn't involved any refugees coming to the United States, and only 267 have been admitted to the United States under the two-year-old Central American Minors Program. The government has received 9,500 applications. The concern is that they place enforcement first and think about due process as an afterthought, and they go in tandem. Appleby and others urged the administration to halt deportations until the expanded refugee program was up and running and the backlogged asylum system could be improved. Johnson said the administration wasn't happy with the small numbers of people approved under the minors program, which is why the government was expanding the program. He noted that the administration worked with Congress to spend $750 million to help El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras fight poverty and violence. And there's more to that article. I've truncated it, removing some of the State Department statements. Because I would like to point out the fact that the violence in Central America is due to United States policy, and it has created a horrific situation economically as well as politically. The U.S. has been behind death squads in the Central American region since the 1980s, at least, and U.S. policy, U.S. aid policy, is very extractive. USAID is a very deceptive term when it's applied to U.S. aid agencies. Generally, there are stipulations that money be spent on U.S. corporations. And so typically, whatever can be produced in a raw state is then shipped to the United States to be refined or shipped elsewhere to be refined so that the inhabitants of Central America and other victim states can only receive the absolute minimum for whatever it is that is extracted from their country, whether it is labor or ore or bananas. A good book to read about that is Open Veins of Latin America by Eduardo Galeano. Even after all these years, it's very instructive. And it starts with the extraction of silver. Very interesting book. Time is 9:11. Pacific Time, you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. From the Web of Debt blog, Ellen Brown writes, Bernie Sanders supporters are flocking to Jill Stein, the presumptive Green Party presidential candidate, with donations to her campaign exploding nearly 1,000% after Bernie endorsed Hillary Clinton last week. Stein, who is running her second presidential campaign in 4 years, said donations to her campaign have increased tenfold in just over 24 hours, obviously due to Bernie Sanders' endorsement of Hillary Clinton and the resulting fallout from the Democratic Party since Tuesday morning. The Green Party, Tuesday morning last week, the Green Party has received over $80,000 in contributions, over half of which comes from first-time donors and half of which comes in the form of contributions under $50. Tellingly, about 615 of those contributions totaled $27, the exact number commonly trumpeted and solicited by the Sanders campaign during his revolutionary grassroots funding movement. That was from usuncut.com. I should be more clear. I started with the article from Ellen Brown and cut to usuncut.com. And this is a topic that I would like to invite your calls and comments, questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, that or anything that I have discussed or that I am about to discuss, feel free to call in, 503-231-8187. Stein salutes Sanders for this progressive populist movement he began and says it is up to her to carry the baton. Can she do it? Critics say her radical policies will not hold up to scrutiny, but supporters say they're just the medicine the economy needs. Now I'm reading this article from Web of Debt blog by Ellen Brown, and this comes on the heels of my trip to Philadelphia to cover the protests for the Democratic Convention. I'll also talk to you about that if you like. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. The whole election phenomenon, be happy to talk with you about that. Stein goes even further, Ellen Brown writes, than Sanders on several key issues, and one of them is her economic platform. She has proposed a power-to-the-people plan that guarantees basic economic human rights, including access to food, water, housing, and utilities, living wage jobs for every American who needs to work, an improved Medicare for All single-payer public health insurance program, tuition-free public education through university level, and the abolition of student debt. She also supports a basic income guarantee, the reinstatement of Glass-Steagall, separating depository banking from speculative investment banking, the breakup of mega banks into smaller banks, federal postal banks to service the unbanked and underbanked, and the formation of publicly owned banks at the state and local level. As with Sanders' economic proposals, her plan has been challenged as unrealistic. Where will Congress find the money? Your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. 81-87-503-231-81-87. Call in now. But Stein argues that funds can be found. Going beyond Bernie, she calls for large cuts to the bloated military budget, which makes up 55% of federal discretionary spending. And having read that, I would like to explain, since you can find pie charts all over the place that show no such thing, you simply have to undo the deception of those pie charts, which are done by, well, for example, if you look on NBC sites, you'll find that pie chart that shows considerably less of federal discretionary spending for the Pentagon. And you have to ask yourself, what's up? Well, NBC is owned by General Electric, which is a huge military contractor. And you can be sure that the people who make up those pie charts understand that their job depends on looking good, which means dissembling. And the way that they dissemble, and it's rather basic, is that they cut out the payment of the debt from past wars, from last year all the way back to the Vietnam War, and pretend that that is not military spending. And that's how they make up those pie charts and say, oh, we're only spending less than half. No, 55% of federal discretionary spending, as Jill Stein says, is correct. Continuing with the article, progressive taxation, Stein argues for progressive taxation, ensuring that the wealthy pay their fair share. Most controversial, however, is her plan to tap the Federal Reserve. Pointing to the massive sums the Fed produced out of the blue to bail out Wall Street, she says the same resources used to save the perpetrators of the crisis could be made available to its Main Street victims, beginning with the students robbed of their futures by massive student debt. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, and James is on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a pretty good feed on my Facebook, and you know, as ever since Bernie endorsed Hillary, I've definitely seen the uptick in the what you've been saying about, you know, how much Jill Stein's funds have exploded, which is amazing. But the other thing that I've seen is now that she's gaining more steam among the Bernie-crats and the progressives, I mean, everybody's like, oh, you know, now it's a whole smear campaign for Jill Stein. I don't agree with everything she says, but I mean, my whole thing is, it's like, we need something different. I mean, Bernie, his platform before he sold out, or, you know, I mean, I guess that's up to debate whether he sold out or somebody was saying something about threatening somebody to be killed. It was weird. But anyway, the fact is that he sold out and left a whole bunch of people with a huge hole in their hearts where they had some hope. And I mean, at this point, I mean, I'm ready for anything, but I definitely want to see people opening up more to the idea of third parties, because, you know, we've had very successful third parties in the past, and, you know, and people seeing that, you know, that it's like that the Democrats and Republicans are running a political cartel straight up.
Well, perhaps, you know, what you're talking about can be reflected in the Huffington Post, which is running an attack piece called Jill Stein, the Liberal Pseudo-Scientific Demagogue. So I guess we can tell what candidate they would prefer.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's ridiculous how much smear stuff is coming out for Jill Stein right now. And it's like, you
someone's
know,
afraid.
People are scared.
Yeah, I think you're right. Someone's afraid.
Yeah, definitely. So anyway, I thank you for reporting on all this, and just keep doing what you do.
Thank you. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Now, continuing with Ellen Brown's article on Jill Stein, she asks, is tapping up the Fed realistic? Putting aside for the moment the mechanics of pulling it off, the central bank has indeed revealed that it has virtually limitless resources, as seen in the radical emergency measures taken since 2008. The Fed first surprised Congress when it effectively bought AIG, a private insurance company, for $80 billion. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi remarked, many of us were taken aback when the Fed had $80 billion to invest, to put into AIG just out of the blue. All of a sudden, we wake up one morning and the AIG has received $80 billion from the Fed. So, of course, we're saying, where does this money come from? The response is, oh, we have it. And not only that, we have more. More to that article, but I would like to talk to Mark. Number to call, 503-231-8187.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
So, how's Philadelphia these days?
It smells like diesel and old rubber.
Really?
It's full of angels and swine. Probably the same as it ever was.
Huh. Well, I used to live there back in the early 70s.
Ah.
Yeah, I used to work there. Used to work at the U.S. Mint.
Well, of course, 1 week in Philadelphia tells me almost nothing. It'd be as if I had a robot land there and make a sample. So I'm not qualified to comment on it.
Yeah,
but
I
had a wonderful time there.
Yeah, well, that's good. I'd like to comment on the fact that when the first financial crisis went down, it was obvious to me that they could have solved the whole problem simply by bailing out the mortgage holders.
Oh, yes, and it would have been less money. It would have been 600 and change billion.
All of those mortgage holders could have been bailed out by the federal government. The federal government could have bought their loans and then remortgaged out those houses to those people using reasonable terms.
Yes, but
they could
actually
have done that, and it would have solved the whole problem.
Except that it would have collapsed the derivatives market, which runs to the multi trillions.
Well, if you ask me, that's just too damn.
Just
bad.
Too bad. I agree.
They
Let
didn't
the
do
parasites
it.
Collapse.
They didn't do it, and that's what they should have done exactly. And now we're in for something that's worse. It's going to happen. You know, the financial system is teetering on the edge.
Have you heard of the bail-in?
Oh, yes. I mean,
they're going to love that.
They did that in Cyprus. So don't keep your money in a bank. Keep it in a credit union.
Credit union, at least you might have a little bit of slack, a little bit of time to do something about your assets. Because, as I've mentioned many times now, Bank of America, at least, we know about Bank of America, has assigned its derivatives betting to the FDIC. Now, that's not proper, or I don't know if it's legal, but they've done it. And guess who's going to be first at the window, and the amount that they would need to withdraw in the case of even a partial collapse of the derivatives betting would be vastly in excess of what the FDIC holds. Vastly, vastly in excess.
Well,
not
yes.
a penny for you. FDIC guarantees your savings? Not if there's a collapse.
No, the banks get together and they put in money. It's like an insurance corporation, and each bank pays insurance, and according to how much money that they would have to be bailed out with, and that insurance fund is woefully underfunded.
Oh yeah, they have many billions of dollars. I can't remember exactly how many billions the FDIC has, and that's just fine for bailing out your bank if it goes down by itself or in combination with a small regional group or something like that. But if Bank of America's derivatives fall down, if they have to pay out 20% on the dollar, then that would run to the trillions, and the FDIC, I assure you, does not have even 1 trillion.
They go to the Federal Reserve and ask for money. The Federal Reserve would then lend them the money, put the money on their books as a new asset, and then the money would be created and it would go out. What's going to happen is that if they continue doing this, we haven't seen it, but if it continues, then eventually we're going to have hyperinflation. And that's just about worse than anything.
Oh, that couldn't happen here. I mean, you can give out money endlessly and people will spend it exactly the same. Yeah, no, I think you're right. Hey, thanks very much for your call.
Bye.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I've been talking about many things. I've been talking about Jill Stein, and I've been talking about the banking industry, which Jill Stein has been talking about in terms of how to end the impoverishment, the pauperization, frankly, of the American public, which is very advanced right now. I would like to point out that half of the population could not pull together enough to get themselves out of jail for a false charge. Do false charges happen? Oh, yeah, they do. Do people go to jail for them? Yes. Do you have $4,000 to pay a lawyer right now? Do you? You got $4,000 sitting right there? Grab it out. Going to be okay? No, you don't. Half of you do not. You do not. And how much money is $4,000? In the grand scheme of things, it's not that much money now, is it? Can't buy a new car with $4,000. Can't even buy a particularly good used car unless you search very carefully. $4,000, that's pitiful. That's pitiful. And that's the police state and the pauperized state that we have gotten used to. We've been trained to get used to that, and that didn't used to be the United States. I mean, there's a lot of things to be said about that. Ethically, morally, got problems with imperialism, but used to have more largesse, didn't it? And not anymore. How do we get used to that? And oh yes, the billionaires want more and more and more, and they will not be happy. They will not be happy until you beg to work for them till for free. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. And Beth is on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, so I wanted to say that Jill Stein is great. Her ideas are fantastic. I think the issue for me really is what the best tactic is moving forward, and whether it involves voting for a lesser candidate to make sure that we don't end up with more elitos on our Supreme Court.
Yeah, we can't let Nixon get in. Oh, wait, that was the last time.
No,
that was the time before that. I'm sorry, I'm just kidding.
I feel like it's a real debate whether you vote 100% for the person that you agree with, or you vote for somebody who is less likely to turn us into a fascist country, when really Jill Stein is not going to get elected. We know that, so that's the debate. Do we work for what we truly believe and put all our energy in that, or do we try to work within the system a la Bernie, which I know people feel like he sold out. He did pull the Democratic platform more towards the left, which is a good thing. Can we work within that question? Can we work if Trump is in there and screwing everything up entirely? I don't know. So that's all I want to say.
Okay, so to cut to the chase, vote for Hillary because Trump.
I would say in our Democratic quote-unquote system, 51% gets you everything. We don't have a representative democracy in the same way that Germany does, where if you get 10% of the vote, you get some seats in parliament. So we're kind of screwed by that system. But at the same time, it does really make a difference who's in the Supreme Court.
Does the blood on Hillary's hands from Honduras or Ukraine bother you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Number
to call, 503-231-8187. Been talking about Jill Stein, and was talking about her comments about how to bail out the economy. Was using an article by Ellen Brown from her blog. And to return with a bit more of that, was talking about the response from the Federal Reserve when they bailed out AIG. Where the money come from, Nancy Pelosi said, the response was, oh, we have it, and only that, we have more. How much more was revealed in 2011 after an amendment by Senator Bernie Sanders to the 2010 Wall Street Reform Law prompted the Government Accounting Office to conduct the first top-to-bottom audit of the Federal Reserve. It revealed that the Fed had provided a whopping $16 trillion in secret loans. Let me say that again. $16 trillion in secret loans to bail out American and foreign banks and businesses during the economic crisis. This is a clear case of socialism for the rich and rugged your own individualism. You're on your own individualism for everyone else, said Sanders in a press release. Then there was a shocker of quantitative easing, an unconventional monetary policy in which the central bank creates new money electronically to buy financial assets, such as treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities, many of them toxic, from the bank. Critics said QE couldn't be done because it would lead to hyperinflation, but it was done, and that dire result has not occurred. Unfortunately, the economic stimulus that QE was supposed to trigger hasn't occurred either. QE has failed because the money has gotten no further than the balance sheets of private banks. To stimulate the demand that will jumpstart the economy, new money needs to get into the real economy and into the pockets of consumers. The goal of QE as currently implemented is to return inflation to target levels by increasing private sector borrowing. But today, as economist Richard Koo explains, individuals and businesses are paying down debt rather than taking out new loans. They're doing this although credit is very cheap because they need to rectify their debt-ridden balance sheets in order to stay afloat. Koo calls this a balance sheet recession. Well, it would appear that I am out of time, and I encourage you to stay tuned because Per Vogering is ready to come into the studio. I had much more on that. I'll get to it next week. I would like to thank Sheila for calling in. I'm sorry I'm not able to get to that call. Quite a lot to say about climate change, so I'll be getting to that next week. And you've been listening to Press Watch, Counter Propaganda, and more of your people-supported radio station coming up on KBOO 90.7 FM and on KBOO.FM. And in that manner, we go out to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Abrupt Climate Change. A talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost in Portland. Dr. Guy McPherson is a professor of conservation biology and an author. He'll present his synthesis of the current peer-reviewed research on Earth's recent phase of rapid warming. Again, that's Abrupt Climate Change, a talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost, 3120 North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
¶¶